Now, also this week, scientists have uncovered residues of 7,000-year-old cheese. Chemist Professor Richard Evershed from the University of Bristol is one of the authors of a paper in the journal Nature this week, which describes how he and his team have made this rather milky discovery. Hello, Richard.
Hello there.
So how did this story begin?
It began truly about 30 years ago when one of our co-authors, Peter Bogucki, was putting together evidence from some sites he'd been excavating with colleagues in Poland where they'd been uncovering these perforated ceramic potsherds. And he propounded a theory based upon those potsherds that they were basically cheese strainers, and basically started to develop the idea that these early farmers, which is the Linneband ceramic culture, were dairy farmers.
When you say they were perforated pots, we're talking clay pots with fairly substantial holes drilled in them,
holes, but very numerous holes. If you look at the images that are in the article, they're all over the vessels. They look like a sort of small colander.
And obviously, one can say, well, they look like the kind of thing that modern day people use to strain cheese, but just because they look like it doesn't mean they definitely were being used to strain cheese. Is there anything else they could have been used for?
Well, that's right. And in fact, we've had an interest in identifying dairy products from the archaeological record for a number of years. And these vessels were one of the major sources of sort of typological evidence. But I must admit, I've been rather sceptical. And I'd often said in my lectures, but surely these could have been used for straining anything.
So how did you approach dealing with this and trying to find out what they really were used for? How did you discover cheese?
Yeah, this is where the two studies sort of collide. Our research, in one part, is looking at the origins of dairying by looking at pottery vessels, usually cooking vessels. We developed a methodology, a chemical method, which allows us to identify milk fat, and it's based upon the fact that animal fats, which are the most common type of organic residue that you find in archaeological pottery when you study pottery from Europe, can be identified through their fatty acid signatures based upon studies that we've done studying many modern animals, carcass fats from dairy fats. Pigs, horses can all be separated, so we can quite confidently identify different fats. So if we go into archaeological pottery, recover the residual fats in there, we can identify these fats quite unambiguously as to whether they're dairy fats or carcass fats.
But these pieces of pottery have been in the ground in this site in Poland, in the centre of Poland, for 7,000-plus years.
It's remarkable, isn't it? Yes.
You can get fats out of them that were from the cheese or the dairy products these people were working with.
Absolutely. It never ceases to amaze me, but it's due to the fact that these fats are preserved deep within the fabric of the pottery, and I imagine that they go into sort of molecular-sized pores in this alumina silicate sort of matrix where they're protected from, say, bacteria getting in there to degrade them, and in the right sort of soil types, they're protected from leaching from out of the pottery by groundwater.
So you got specimens of the pots, you took small samples which enabled you to isolate these fats. What do those fats tell us then? They say that there was dairy material in these pots.
That's right. And just to clarify, we're not only focusing on the cheese strainer vessels. We've looked at a large number of other vessel types from the site. And quite specifically, what it shows is that these perforated vessels, these putative cheese strainers, are the ones that contain dairy fats. If you then sort of start to put together this as like a forensic exercise, we've got dairy fats associated with perforated vessels, and you start to ask yourself the question, what other milk processing activity could you reasonably have been doing which required you to strain some sort of milk product? Well, it's cheese making. There is no other milk processing activity that uses a straining activity.
Why do you think these people wanted to make cheese?
Well, there's obviously two motivations. One, you would be producing, if you had a substantial dairy herd, as the animal bone assemblages from these sites seem to suggest, you would have had surplus of milk at certain times of year, in the summertime, for instance. And so the production of cheese would have been a way of producing a non-perishable product that you could then preserve throughout the year, so you could take full advantage of the nutritional properties of milk in the wintertime. But the other critical factor, and this is where Peter Bogucki comes back into the story with his paper from the 1980s, relates to this lactose intolerance phenomena. It's very likely, almost certainly, that these early farmers were lactose intolerant. So they would potentially have got quite poorly had they been drinking substantial amounts of whole milk. So it looks like that this straining activity was perhaps a recognition of this, and they had found a way of getting round the lactose intolerance problem, because what you're doing when you separate the curds from the whey contains the lactose. So you're actually producing a lactose-reduced product when you produce cheese, and thus lactose-intolerant farmers would have been able to exploit the nutritional qualities of milk.
Richard, thank you very much. One has to wonder what that cheese would have tasted like back 7,000 years ago. Professor Richard Evershed from the University of Bristol.